After the play, Emile put the top down and drove me around Paris so fast, my heart was in my mouth. His Lancia Aurelia Spider has the most sensuous curves I've seen in an automobile, and it is red. With the lights of Paris spinning by, Emile accelerated around L'Étoile. He weaved his way through the traffic on the Champs-Élysées, down to the Place de la Concorde, in a vortex of automobiles whirling past the obelisk of the great pharaoh Ramses II. Emile downshifted and it roared around and around while I held out both arms, feeling the breeze sweeping over my skin. I love riding in a Lancia. With the wind lashing my hair and with eyes closed, I imagine how different the Place de la Concorde looked since the days of the Revolution, when furious Parisians tore down the statue of Louis XV, renamed it Place de la Révolution, and set up the guillotine. They inflamed masses of screaming people assembled to view the decapitation of not only 1,000 despised nobles, King Louis XVI and Queen Marie Antoinette, but in a blur of history, the Revolution's own children, Saint-Just, Danton, Robespierre, and my heroine, Olympe de Gouges. "Let's go to La Coupole," Emile cried out over the wind. "I need a drink." "Let's go where you've never been before," I said. "How do you know where I've never been before?" "I just know. It's impossible to know everything about Paris." "Okay, where to?"
"The Alley of the Swans."
"How do we go?"
"Follow the Quai de Grenelle to the Birakeim Bridge."
Emile cut between two speeding automobiles with only inches to spare, turned around the Cours La Reine and followed the quay along the Seine, heading west towards the Birakeim Bridge. I took down my braided hair and let it fly free in the warm wind. Emile found a shop and stopped for two bottles of Veuve Clicquot. We parked by the river and crossed the bridge over the lazy current of the Seine. I led him down a dark alley of trees which arched over the path, poplars, alders, willows, and ash, forming a long tunnel the full length of the narrow little island. Emile started to say something, but I motioned him to be quiet. I whispered, "Listen to the murmur of the current and the susurrus of the wind." "Right in the middle of the city."
"Solitude," he said.
"Look again," I whispered. Lying in the shadow of the trees, arms and legs entwined, two lovers were kissing.
"Come, I'll show you the Statue of Liberty."
"The Statue of Liberty is in New York Harbor.
Come, you'll see."
I took Emile's hand and led him to the western tip of the little isle, and there stood the Statue of Liberty, 22 meters tall. Look at the inscription on Liberty's tablet. It says, 4th of July, 1776, and the 14th of July, 1789. American Independence Day and Bastille Day. It took quite a bit of time for Bartoli to scare up the money. But Chicago newspaper man Joseph Pulitzer came through for Bartoli, starting a campaign to raise money for the statue, encouraging everyone in America to give. Even school children gave a nickel or a dime. Since most of the contributions amounted to less than a dollar, it could be said that Madame Liberty was built by the masses. Et voilà! The statue was inaugurated 30 years after the birth of the idea, with nearly 1 million people looking on. From the windows of the New York Stock Exchange, Wall Street, traders showered the parade with ticker tape, beginning the tradition of the ticker tape parades of New York City. Emma Lazarus, a poet who was aiding refugees fleeing anti-Semitic slaughter in Russia, Poland, and the Ukraine, wrote the immortal words for Madame Liberty. "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free." But not all agreed about how free America was. An African-American newspaper said that as long as the Ku Klux Klan was free to murder colored men and rape their wives and daughters, the Statue of Liberty's torch must never be lit until there was true liberty in the United States of America. At that moment, a tourist boat's bright headlights swung in an arc around the island of the Swans, creating a cascading flood of light fragmented by the leaves of the willow trees, the filigree of shadows moving around me in a circle like a whirling net, a glittering world of light and shadows shimmering like a kaleidoscope in flight. Then the lights of the boat disappeared, and the reflection of the moon reappeared on the current of the Seine. I sensed Emil's arm gliding around my bare shoulders, and I moved ever so slightly. His arm drew away. "Why did you bring me here?" he asked. Then it dawned on me I might have carelessly misrepresented my intentions. "You're much too old for me," I said. "Then how do you see me?" "Like a naughty uncle who must be chastised from time to time."
"Are you chastising me?"
"Pas encore." I took his arm and continued our walk along the island. "You're frightfully handsome. You cut quite a figure considering how old you are. I can see why women are crazy about you."
"How would you know that?"
"Oh, I just know. It's the way you look at a woman, that's what does it."
"You certainly know a lot for a young girl."
"I'm just a careful observer. That's what writers do. Observe. I've observed you for a few years. Besides, I'm French, a connoisseur of men." He sat down on the bank beside the water, opened the sack, and took out the Veuve Clicquot and two wine glasses.
"Are you a connoisseur of champagne?" he said. "I can learn."
I took off my shoes, carefully saving the tissue paper. "Don't let me forget my shoes. Yvonne would be very upset." He pulled the cork, and the champagne gushed into my glass. I was thirsty and drank it straight down.
"No, not like that," he cried.
"Would you like to show me the right way?" One sips it little by little, holding it on the tongue for a moment to savor it. I stretched out my legs. "Do you realize this is the first time I've been taken out by a man?"
"You have really beautiful legs."
"It's all of that dancing. Wonderful for the legs. May I have another glass of champagne?
I feel like getting a little tipsy."
He poured another, and I leisurely tasted it on my tongue. He leaned slowly towards me, his lips close to mine. I shifted to the right and drew further away. "You must be careful. Girls can be dangerous." He put his hand on mine. I could see emotion sweeping over his face.
"Don't get romantic on me," I whispered. "Even will kill you."
"You do know you are irresistible, don't you? That's why you'll need all of your self-control. Why doesn't an irresistible girl like you have a boyfriend?"
"How do you know I don't?"
"Yvonne told me." "You've asked a really poignant question. It's just that young boys don't appeal to me." I drank another glass of champagne in silence. Finally, I looked up at Emil. "I'll tell you the reason why. I have someone in mind, but he's in love with someone else." I slipped my nylons down my legs, rolled them up, and put them in Emil's sack. "I'm doomed to love older men."
"But you just said that I'm too old for you."
"I'm doomed to love older men who aren't too old."
"Then that leaves me out?"
"That leaves you out." There was a little champagne left in my cup, bubbles fizzing in the bottom. I tilted my head back, lifted my cup high, and slowly poured the champagne into my mouth.
"You're not in love with your dance teacher, are you?"
I sputtered with laughter, spraying champagne all over him. Champagne was foaming on his eyeglasses. I took my handkerchief from my purse and wiped his face and polished his eyeglasses. "If you knew Monsieur Oro Chaza, you would understand that he's very principled. He doesn't carry on with his students. But you've hit upon a grave problem."
"What is that?"
"If I tell you, will you promise to tell no one?"
"I promise."
"I'm doomed to love men who don't love me." Tears suddenly flooded in my eyes. It was all I could do to regain my composure. "I've given it a great deal of thought," I said after some time. "I think it's because Papa went away. There's a big hole in me."
"How old were you when you last saw your Papa?"
8. Emil started to say something, but I put my finger to his lips.
"Shh.
I'd rather not talk about it. Tonight, I just want to be happy." Shadows were dancing on the river, moonlight fragmented by leaves, a rustling of wind in the trees. Suddenly, I felt a surge of hope. May I have another champagne? On the way back, I curled up in the seat, feeling the warm air rushing over my skin. I could ride around with you all night. Where do you want to go? Oh, everywhere and no place. Just drive around the city. I love the lights spinning around and around. You drank too much. Let's go to my favorite bridge, Alexandre III. He spun the roadster around and roared along the Quai de Grenelle. When he pulled up to the Alexandre III bridge, I jumped out and climbed onto the base of one of the cast iron sculptures of the street lamps. He jumped out to stop me, but I was so quick, I'd already climbed high up the pole, a tipsy ballerina spinning around the pole. In one direction, I could see the Grand Palais, and in the opposite, the blur of the shimmering dome of Saint-Louis des Invalides. Like a whirling dervish, I spun around and around the pole, singing an Edith Piaf song. Sous le ciel de Paris s'envole une chanson. Ah, ah. Elle est née d'aujourd'hui dans le cœur d'un garçon. Sous le ciel de Paris, la 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 la. Suddenly, everything was spinning around even though I was no longer moving. Emile climbed up to pull me down. I heaved and vomited all over him. He laid me down on the pavement and I threw up again on his shoes. He got a towel out of his trunk and began wiping his trousers. He smelled terrible. Suddenly, he fell down laughing until tears came into his eyes. Laughter so violent, I thought he was going to choke. He collapsed on the pavement, laughing and laughing. For a moment, Emile was freed from the prison of his tightly coiled soul.